How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com. He's going to join me. You find all Eric's stuff at Basket and Review, as you guys well know. Slapping Glass, bunch of other places where you can always find Eric Fawcett's work. On this episode of Florida Basketball Hour, we are going to answer listener questions from our Patreons. So those are people that subscribe to patreon.com/Florida Basketball Hour. And one way that we've kind of found, it's almost like it's great because I think our listening family over at the Patreon is obviously incredible. Just a really awesome, awesome group of knowledgeable hoop heads. But also, you know, it's a chance to, it's one of our favorite things to do is just kind of sit back and show our appreciation to our Patreon subscribers. So, you know, if you're listening to this in the podcast form, you go to patreon.com/FloridaBBHour and subscribe. If you like what you hear, you're going to get, Florida has some good people covering the team, some really good journalists. There's nothing like the coverage you get at the Patreon, from film studies to exclusive access to, I think we've been on the ground at more venues than pretty much anybody. And then, you know, stuff like Fawcett breaking down 12 of the more remarkable minutes of defense I've seen in an SEC game in a while. You know, it's all there. And we get Eric Fawcett tonight to answer Patreon questions back from Korea. So Eric, man, hope you had a great trip. What's going on?
Yeah, had a wonderful trip. Kind of mentioned a couple of the things quickly during Patreon videos, cause I kept up the Patreon content while I was there. Shout out to that famous, really fast, South Korean, internet, because yeah, I was just, whether it was a McDonald's, whether it was, a lobby of a building, whether it was, airport, it was things were humming, which meant that I was able to do some Patreon content, which for those of you who remember when I've been in Europe the last couple of years, it's like trying to get Wi-Fi fast enough to support a recording is nearly impossible. So which is one where I do film studies is impossible, I should say. Obviously Europe has internet, anyways, it was great to be able to keep that up. But yeah, Korea was really amazing. I know everyone is going to Japan these days, and I did the same last year and really loved it. But man, I think Korea is extremely underrated, and a lot of people that go to Japan should really go to Korea. So anyways, that was a really amazing trip. I am extremely jet lagged, just beyond belief. So we'll see what comes out of me in this particular episode. Cool. But made it through Stadium and Gale last night with just tripping over my words over and over and over and over again. And people bore with me on that one. So hopefully they'll have a little bit of grace with this as I talk a little bit, probably a little bit slower, or get myself into more trouble. We'll see. But anyways, it is great to be answering our listener questions, because that is one of the, or sorry, Patreon questions, because that is one of the things that's really great about the Patreon is it's just kind of a constant dialogue in the comments, not just for us and people that support us, but even just like between members. I always kind of say it in our videos that's one of the great part about the Patreon is if you pose a question, you make a comment, like no one is a jerk on our Patreon. Like no one's going to spend money to go and be a troll. So the discussions, even between other Patreon members that happen in the comments of our videos or our posts, is always high level. It's always respectful. And I think that's something that is a really cool part of it. But because of that, we also get all kinds of great questions all the time. Some of which are to be answered, you know, right away in those comment sections, or be discussed there. And some of it is stuff that we save for episodes like this. So it's really great. We can get this out to our Patreon supporters early as part of a benefit to them supporting. But also it's always great questions and stuff that will, yeah, hit the regular feed and get all our listeners, because we love all the listeners too. So yeah, excited for it.
Yeah, we had a lot, and we're gonna do our best to answer as many of them as we can. And if we don't get to something, we will try to answer it the next time we do, because we will do another one. But you know, point is, you know, if you are a Florida Basketball Hour listener, go over to patreon.com/FloridaBBHour, subscribe. You'll get content like this. And you'll get to ask us questions that we'll listen to on the podcast, which is part of the Stadium and Gale Network. So it's good to see Eric on the mothership last night. First question's from Andy Watson. This year's team, until very recently, did not get a lot of back cut baskets out of their typical horns look the way they seemed to last year. Is that simply because teams are packing more inside? Is there a familiarity factor that's starting to blossom with the guards? It's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts as, like, you need a threat for someone to come and lift up and either get that dribble handoff or just kind of lift up to get a catch and shoot opportunity. So when you look at who was getting those backdoor cuts, it was largely Will Richard. It was largely Walter Clayton. That's just a very different look than Hauk or, of course, Boogie Fland or Xavien Lee. And I think that teams are just, not as worried, not as tightly hugged up, because that's kind of the move, right, is when you get that elbow catch, it's one of those things where that shooter will take that one hard step up, like they are going to go receive a dribble handoff or just a catch and shoot opportunity. They put their foot in the ground, as I guess you'd say in football terms, and you change directions and rip back door. And you just need to be played pretty tightly for that to work. And even like the UC, the guy that's gotten one recently is Klavzar, who is Florida's biggest shooting threat at the moment. So even though he's maybe not the same finishing threat as some of the guys last year. I also do think there's an extent, like Florida tries to run a backdoor play out of like 50% of their timeouts. And I do think it has become extremely, extremely predictable. Yeah. I will say that and like, hey, they did it all last year and it was like still deadly, because it's like, yeah, you can guard against the backdoor cut because you know it's coming out of a timeout. But if you overplay it, then Will Richard or Walter Clayton's just going to rise up and get a good look from three, and teams didn't want that either. And yeah, that's not the same threat this year. So I do think it has something to do with the personnel. They don't have the guys that are threats to do it. I do think it is also extremely, extremely predictable. Florida needs to start getting some out of their just regular flow of their offense. If you do it out of a dead ball timeout every single time, teams are just sitting on it. You can see they're calling it out. They're expecting it. There's a stagger on one side, and then there's the reversal to the other side that like spin. Like it is very, very obvious. And yes, in the college game, that's not always the best coached. Not the highest IQ players. Like, you can still get it a lot, but I do think teams have really, really snuffed it out kind of. So I think that Florida will maybe need to go away from it a little bit and go back to it in March or so, if they think that's going to be a big after timeout. But it's kind of like, well, we'll see if they keep it up after this last game. But I mean, right now, you know, everyone listening is like, next time Florida comes out of a timeout, like, wait to see if they try to run a backdoor cut or not. And if it's anything like the last couple of weeks, it's about 50% of the time that will, whether or not, and you know, whether or not they get it, most of the time they haven't been. Some of that's due to personnel. I think some of that's due to predictability.
That's great stuff. Cameron Fry is the second question. He said, you guys talked about it on the last show, trend over the last several games has been Urban plays more minutes than Xavien Lee, even though Lee starts the game. Staff has done this before with Micah starting 2 years ago, and kind of with Chinyelu last year. Yeah, it's true. I guess my question is, why not just start Klavzar? I mean, that's a reasonable question. I think Todd just kind of has the lineups that he liked to start with, and he, I'd be interested to see, and I'm sure this is tracked somewhere, but I think in the last 2 years he's changed his starting lineup probably three times, maybe four, and at least three of those were related to injuries. So you know, right now, like, small sample size theater to some extent, But Florida's best five-man lineup is actually Isaiah Brown, Ruben Chinyelu, Thomas Houck, Urban Klavzar, and Xavien Lee. I know that's a wild thing to kind of notice. But if you eliminate like the number of possessions from that, it very quickly becomes Condon, Flan, Houck, Chinyelu, and Klavzar. So that's Evan on Evan Miyakawa. So like, you know, I don't know if, and I guess the point I would add on that, I don't know if Eric's going to have anything else to add. It's just like the lineup with Xavien Lee, like the starting lineup is easily like Florida's fifth or sixth best lineup in lineup data. But right now the distinction is just leverage minutes. Like when it's an important time in a game, like right now, Urban Klavzar is playing those minutes.
Yeah. On one hand, there is something about like, you know, the classic stereotype of it's not who starts, it's who finishes. Like, I also do think pre-NIL, it kind of like mattered because there was clout in starting. And that's something when you, you know, couldn't pay players and players were looking for some kind of recognition, like that was a carrot to dangle. Now I think like for a Klavzar, like it obviously isn't hurting his effort level to be coming off the bench. And I mean, that's a guy who's a pro. He's played pro for many years. He is still playing pro, whatever you want to say, making money at Florida. And I think when you pay guys, they play when you want them to play. Yeah, what doesn't matter to them as much if they start or not, where it probably did a little bit. You had to use those starting spots to manage expectations. I also do think to some extent there is a little bit of, well, it's in, and this might not make as much sense because we've seen that starting lineup isn't optimized, but on the holistic view of Florida basketball, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, in the sense that Florida is winning games. They're not getting ran in those opening minutes, where when I was really pushing for changes in starting lineup 2 years ago, and even to an extent last year, is because like Florida was getting into holes and then they were digging themselves out of it. Florida hasn't been putting themselves in the same holes. It's just like clearly gets better when Klavzar is in the game for Lee. And I think to some extent, when you just look, you know, holistically at Florida basketball, it's like, I do think Klavzar is really good. I think he's playing better than Lee. I think he is a better option than Lee. However, yeah, he's certainly benefited from getting to play against some bench units, at least as in his first minutes of the game. And it's one of those things that's like, okay, your starting lineup isn't getting killed. It's not being optimized. It's still playing well, though it's not optimized. And you're looking at Klavzar coming off the bench, and that's working glowingly. I think to some extent, Florida's got to look at it and say like, okay, well, like things are still going pretty well. We just, you know, beat Alabama pretty handily, just beat Texas A&M pretty handily with Klavzar coming off the bench and playing about bulk of his minutes. They're like, what happens if you put, you know, you take Lee off to put him off the bench and it's even more of a disaster. Like, you know, like Florida can operate in its current iteration of starting lineup and Klavzar coming off the bench while acknowledging it's not necessarily the best starting group. And yeah, to me, it just, it matters who's playing the most minutes. That's been Klavzar last couple of weeks, and who's playing the important ones. And that's Klavzar. So I know I was the guy over the last 2 years that was really pushing changes to the starting lineup. And I thought it was just more like apparent that they were digging themselves into holes. That was problematic, even though the starting lineup, yeah, is not optimized. Don't feel like they're putting themselves in holes. Things are generally working. Klavzar is being so consistently good off the bench. Yeah, you might as well just keep things going as it is.
Yeah, I mean, the efficiency margin on Evan Mia, distinction between like the starting lineup and the Klavzar for Lee change is actually pretty large. It's about 19 points. So Florida's efficiency margin with Chinyelu with the starting five is 37.9, which is fine. That's 421 possessions. And then the Klavzar lineup is actually only 130 possessions right now, but it's 56.3. So, I mean, it's a lot more. And that 130 possessions, so much of that is in league play. They hardly ever use that lineup in the non-conference.
Yeah, no bye games to fatten that one up, really.
Yeah, no bye games to fatten it up. So that's, you know, that's pretty interesting. Anyway, good question from Cameron Fry. Matthew, thanks for subscribing. He asked, it seems like the brand of basketball we played the brand of basketball that suits us against Alabama, and the win mattered more because of the chirping Can we expect to continue to see, you know, that sort of interior play succeed in tournament time when it really matters? I mean, that's like the million-dollar question, is how far can you advance in the NCAA tournament off the strength of a front court? There are other questions like this, but, you know, I think obviously that's kind of the biggest question for Florida right now. I was actually talking to a staff member about another issue last week, and I'll say that Louisville in like the early 2010s came up, and Florida's 3-point numbers are a little worse, but in that area. So like you can, but that's kind of the outlier, like the team that shot 30% and won the national championship. And the game was different then. I mean, you didn't shoot nearly as many volume threes, but I will say, wow, they shoot it better. Like Arizona does not shoot a lot of threes. Like the teams that are really good this year, with the exception of like Houston, aren't really high volume three teams. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, that's kind of the million-dollar question. Should we do the next one, Eric? Let's just keep it going.
Sure.
Gatorade 08, are there any teams remaining on our schedule that pose a significant stylistic issue that could keep Florida from winning the SEC title? I'll kick that to Eric. I'm interested in the Texas game. I think venue matters. So like the fact it's in the Moody Center and not in Gainesville, and like the fact that Texas is like pretty explosive offensively. And then I love the one big that they have, who's really good. I don't know, Vokatitis. I don't know like depth wise how they'll hang in there, but if they hit shots, then maybe.
Yeah. It's really funny. Like I was one of the first people I feel going back to last year when the kind of partners were announced in Florida's SEC schedule, how I said that Florida's SEC schedule was going to be really, really easy.
Yeah.
It has turned out to be that. And it somehow became even easier than we could have possibly imagined, because I think looking at the schedule, when it was like, okay, well, Florida's got a bye week and then they play Texas A&M, and we didn't think Texas A&M was going to be very good before the season. And suddenly that became a massive advantage for the Gators, getting the full week to prepare for a team that has one of the weirder styles in the SEC. So somehow a schedule that I thought was the easiest in the SEC by a ton was somehow even easier than what I thought. I mean, I do not share your opinion of Texas necessarily. They don't do it for me. The defense is so
they're
poor, which is like given some of the piece, I don't know, like it's still looking, you know, a whole lot like Roddy Terry basketball, which is, you know, it's a new coach and still you thought there'd be some big changes, and they are a little bit more explosive offensively. But yeah, I don't know, like that one doesn't scare me at all. Like I think the one for me that would be the only kind of potentially problematic one, and I guess if you were looking for one area that the Gators did not get lucky, is that they probably would have liked to have played Kentucky earlier in the SEC play before Kentucky started to figure things out. Kentucky is playing a bit better. A lot better, you could say. It's kind of interesting. They have kind of continued to drop in KenPom despite getting wins that have people a lot more excited about them. But whatever the case may be, I do think that kind of the straight physicality in the backcourt of like in Otega Owe would give Florida's front court issues. They do have the legitimate size in the front court with Malachi Moreno, with Brandon Garrison. They can definitely beat Florida in the 3-point category significantly. I'm not saying that I think that Kentucky is even a bad matchup for Florida. I'm not saying that I think Kentucky's going to, you know, sweep Florida or something like that. But I guess if I had to say, it would be like maybe that last game of the season that could also mean a whole lot to Kentucky. And you know, the game will be at Rupp. So I guess I would point to that one. But even then, I just the whole way we've always thought Florida was going to win this conference regular season, even when they were not looking very good in non-conference play, it still was like, oh, well, the rest of the SEC is not looking great either. Florida's got a huge schedule advantage. And I still look at this and I think it would be honestly disappointing if the Gators didn't win the regular season. And I know that that's kind of like that shouldn't be the bar all the time, that like if you fall anything short of first in the SEC, it's a disappointment. But man, with everything breaking their way this year, they should win the SEC regular season, and I am not particularly scared by any of the matchups remaining.
Yeah, I could see a split with Kentucky. Like, I think that's fair. I will say that, like, the closest front court they played to Florida, arguably, in the SEC is Missouri, who beat them because they couldn't handle their physicality inside. And that was when they were playing better or starting to play better. And then, obviously, they play Gonzaga, who has a front court that's much more similar to Florida's because they had Braden Huff and just got absolutely clobbered inside. I mean, I think Gonzaga had 60 points in the paint, and you know, so we'll see. Like, I will say, like, again, Kentucky's had Todd Golden's number. I mean, other than Walter Clayton going absolutely nuclear in Rupp Arena, they've beaten him every time. So we'll see. That'll be interesting. Arkansas is super talented. They've been bad on the road, quite frankly. You know, they beat Miss State pretty bad on the road, but Miss State's terrible. So again, like to Eric's point, the schedule kind of broke properly. GatorBit08 also asked, based on current draft projections, what are the odds we could bring back guys like Flan, Khan, and Chinyelu for next year? I mean, I think the odds on Condon are improving every day. I think financially, Alex would be silly to not come back, quite honestly, because, you know, I think the goal is to get a second contract at the next level. So, like, that'll still be his challenge a year from now. And his distinction in age, I don't think matters that much in terms of managing that challenge, whereas he can bank, like, $2.5 million, probably more than that money, by returning next year. Will it be kind of different for him without his best friend around? I'm sure it will. Like, I'm sure that will actually factor into things, as well how far Florida goes in the NCAA tournament. I mean, you know, if Florida makes the Final Four again, does Alex want to come back and play a third, you know, or does he just want to get on with it? But I mean, I think NIL changes that calculus immensely. And financially, it's kind of a no-brainer for him. Boogie Flan, same story. You know, I think the offense is going to come. And Boogie's just 19, so he's not in a position to get, like, punished by draft scouts on account of age yet. You know, whereas, like, next year, there could be, like, urgency on that front because you don't want to get to 21 at his size, I think. But those are kind of my takes on that. Unless Eric has something to add, we can keep marching. I think Chinyelu's the same story on Chinyelu.
I mean, it's really going to be interesting because I think that Condon would have, I do think Condon will go to the NBA, but you know, there's a good chance if he just wants to bank a couple more million dollars before getting what will probably be the same starting salary in the NBA regardless, there's could be a compelling case. I still don't think, like, I know that it's great to see Chinyelu's name really getting a lot of, you know, hype in NBA draft circles because of his recent play. I mean, at the same time, like, centers like him are getting $3-4 million in college basketball right now. I would venture to say almost certainly he's not going to be a lottery. He wouldn't be a lottery pick, and therefore that money would be more than he's going to make in the first year of an NBA contract. So I really do think there is a compelling case for him to come back. Now, honestly, the really interesting part there would be, like, say Condon comes back, say Chinyelu comes back. Well, that might be $6 million or more to bring both of those guys back. And Florida might have to have a difficult internal conversation about, hey, we love these guys. This is not great roster construction, or you could maybe argue this wouldn't be great roster construction to pay that amount of your salary pool to two guys functionally in the same position. Yes, I know Condon plays at the four and he's constantly running into Chinyelu's guy who's rotating over to him every time Condon gets a short roll pass. But you know, it would be very interesting if it's going to cost $7 million to bring these guys both back, which it very well could, and that could be them coming back on a discount. Florida might say, like, hey, we're better off seeing, you know, getting that extra year for Handlocked in, bringing him back at a cheaper number, bringing one of those guys back and just, like, having to be willing to watch. And that's, like, an interesting college story that hasn't happened yet, is a guy that's, like, loved, no you know, no scandal, no anything like that, but just has to be like allowed to move on. Like, this is much higher level than Denzel Aberdeen. If it were to happen, like it could be very interesting to watch. And I also think with Boogie Flatten, like, it still hasn't like reached NBA circles. I don't feel when talking about it, like,
right.
Point guards do not get drafted high. No one wants point guards. No one is drafting 6'1" point guards. Like, no one is in a rush to get that. I always thought that Boogie Flatten, like, I loved him as a player coming out of high school. As a college player, I've never understood the NBA. Like, what, just go look at the draft and go see how 6'1" guards are getting picked. Go see like Tyler Tanner's like ripping everyone up and, you know, finishing with athleticism, hitting a million threes, and people are still like wondering if he should be a first round pick. Like, and I know he's smaller than Boogie Flatten. He doesn't have the same level of, I don't know, athleticism. He's still pretty athletic, underrated, but it's just another example. Like, I think all players in the mold of Boogie Flatten are destined for lengthy college careers. You never know what someone's just motivations are about, if they just want to like start their pro career and like figure it out. But from just like maximizing your earning potential, I think you could chalk up all future guys like Boogie Flatten in that mold to be 4-year college guys. I do think that Boogie Flatten's coming back for at least one more year. I'm not saying to Florida even necessarily, because I'm not.
It would be to Florida. Like that.
If you're making an NBA draft or college argument, like, it's, I don't even really think it's a discussion right now. I think it's pretty, I just would be fairly sure that Flatten is coming back to college.
Yeah, it would be to Florida too. Like, from everything I hear, like, yeah, they love him. They wish he was making more shots. but he's a great kid. He has a, he's a bulldog. He's a gritty player. You could tell watching Fawcett's like A&M, like, it's easy to love that guy. He's got to make some more shots. But Darian Williams is really the only thing close to what, like, the Darian Williams, JT Toppin discussion that, like, Texas Tech had.
Oh, yeah, true.
With, like,
that's a good point.
About what Florida had, like, $12 million. Like, Florida, that, and that's what Florida fit. Like, Florida's at 11, but, like, I think they think maybe they can squeeze another mill out next year if things go the way they want. And like, if you get to 12, even then, like, that's a hard conversation to have. Like, can you still spend on both Ruben Chinyelu and Alex Condon and Boogie Flynn, and then what do you do? Like, you know,
and I'd say no to,
right,
to spending $6 to $7 to $8 million on your two front court players, especially, right. I will assume that Hanlockton would be able to return.
Yeah,
want to return and be at a much less.
A Gainesville judge will allow him. A Gainesville judge will allow him.
and then, I mean, even then, like, I'm not saying I think he's going to go and gonna be the best big in the SEC, but like, at some point, it's like, yeah, like, they've paid a good number to keep like a Mikic around for years. At some point, the return on investment is having that guy slide into a regular role. So I think if you look at like, insert one of Chinyelu or Condon, Micah Hanlockton, Mikic, and you're like, okay, well, and like, that could be, maybe like that's $5 million right there, $4.5 million, as opposed to $7 million for Chinyelu or $8 million for Chinyelu and Condon. Like, that, I don't know. It's very interesting stuff. Honestly, it's something I have to deal with as a professional basketball coach all the time.
Yeah.
It could make for some very uncomfortable situations. Though, you never know if players will, you know, play for less than their market value. Florida's still, you know, getting a little bit of that bump, that which is what happens also when you win a title. And that's where also Florida's, how Florida does this year could be in that conversation once again. Like, Florida thinks that they'll be around that number you mentioned for NIL. Well, you know, you win back-to-back championships. Like, who knows what could happen in terms of, donations, donors stepping up, all that kind of stuff. But this turned into a much longer question when you just, you know, gave your piece and said we should move on. And
no, I mean, talk for another 5 minutes. There are a lot of conversations. There are a lot of questions that kind of overlap anyway. So, I mean, spending one time on a great question is good. Like, Sina Ogholikon, thank you for subscribing, Sina. Asked the same question about what lineup data shows. He said lineup data shows that Urban instead of Lee is significantly better. That's correct. We kind of talked about that and like their kind of high leverage approach. Jack Young asked a great question. that I was really curious about Eric's thoughts, honestly. Like he said, would love to hear your early thoughts on the NBA careers of Walt, Will, and Elijah. And like, I can tell you that Will Richard is clearly beloved already. And he's an interesting one. Like if you just check box scores and like, so for the NBA, ESPN has box plus minus in their like box score. But like, if you look at box, like Will Richards is always good. It's always good. Like he's just impactful. He plays smart. He clearly has accepted a role. He's playing 20 to 24 minutes a game. I think that might be a little conservative, but I think that's right without pulling up the numbers. So really good for him. Walt, we'll see. I mean, he just got moved, so we'll see what happens in Memphis. He should get to play more. And then Elijah has looked good when he's been in Toronto. He's obviously been a force in the G League. I'm a little surprised at how well Elijah's played in the G League offensively.
Yeah, that was not necessarily a league that I thought was going to be particularly suited to his style. So that's been great to see. I mean, for Richard to just absolutely hit the ground running and playing with, you know, a veteran team, that can be tough for rookies. And the way that he kind of slid in, was able to start so many games. I mean, you couldn't reasonably wish for any better of a start for Will Richard. This is like as good as it could be for him to come in, be someone who could start a few games, defend at a high level, like make a league average amount of threes, like really impressive. And then, like with Walter Clayton, I do think you're seeing a little bit of like just how much more difficult it is to create shots off the dribble than it was at college. And for someone who is just like, you know, a little smaller, like it just seems like he's struggling a little bit to get separation and kind of struggle to shoot because of it. Though I have been impressed with his passing, which I feel like his vision has been a little bit better than certainly I expected, and the speed of the game. And just, you know, we know it's not like he was ever this high level read guy at Florida. And I do think he's adjusted fairly well. So yeah, those would be kind of my thoughts. But I mean, on the whole, I'd say like, I know some people had higher expectations for Clayton. I had my, you know, somewhat hesitancies, but I would say that this is like, he's playing minutes and probably went about as I would have expected. Then I would say Will Richard's career has gone, or rookie season has gone much better than I expected. And then I would say Elijah's rookie season has gone much better than I expected. So like on the whole, the class has done outstanding, really.
They really have. So we got a couple NCAA tournament type questions since we're 4 weeks and 5 days from the greatest day on the calendar, Selection Sunday. Jimmy Valentine, thanks for subscribing. Jimmy's awesome. He's been a Patreon, I think, since like the first day of the Patreon. What is our ceiling seed-wise for the NCAA tournament? I think it's – I go back and forth. I think it's a 2, but I think they need some help. Like – And you guys, like Fawcett knows, I have pounded the table about loss volume. And like, I do think it matters at some point. Like Florida is going to finish with a top 10 schedule, even with the SEC gifts that they've gotten. They're 5th in strength of schedule right now. What would concern me in the 2 discussion is they're 16th in strength of record. And a lot of that is because they've lost 6 games. They have one loss that's not a bad loss, but it's not great. TCU, that one stings. Not a game they should have lost. It's a game that really made the staff very upset that they lost. and then I think the Missouri loss is okay. It's a road loss in league play. Again, probably shouldn't have happened. And all their other 4 losses were very close to basically what the 4 of the best teams in the country. Or 3 of the best teams in the country, and then Auburn. So long way short is like, that's a lot of losses. And like, if you assume, which I think it's safe to assume, that Florida will lose one more game at least in their next 9, then you get to 7 losses. Like, at what point do you pass the threshold where you can't access a 2? So I think a 3 is much more reasonable. I do think if Florida wins the SEC regular season championship and stays as high as they are in the analytics and has the top 10 strength of schedule they should have, they're going to be a 3 seed.
Yeah, I think that was, I forgot if the original question was like ceiling. I think the ceiling is probably 2. I don't think they could get up to a 1. Just pretty difficult for, again, like you, Neil, you mentioned, like for six lost teams to get that opportunity. And again, this is where the SEC being down, you know, ended up, well, I don't say it hurt the Gators. Like we think the like, I kind of agree. I feel like the Gators are off their, on their way to a three seed. I think like, again, the, if you were betting, the over under would be like, I guess maybe like a three and give you a chance at a push. Maybe it would be 2.5, but so I'm not going to say like, I don't make it sound like, you know, the bad SEC has hurt the Gators. It's also given them opportunities to rattle off a bunch of decent to good wins, but yeah, they just don't really have the opportunities in front of them to go get all these like marquee wins that like if you look at the teams right now, that would be one seeds. You're looking at like an Arizona and like a Michigan who are going to continue to have like really, really good opportunities in their leagues. Then you've got Duke and UConn who I just like, I guess they've got landmines they could take in those leagues. But at the same time, I think it, because of what they've done, they could just kind of like coast to a one seed pretty much. And then I'd look at like the Houston, Iowa State, Illinois, and it's just like, it's just going to be tough for the Gators to have the same, again, the same amount of quality win opportunities as those teams in the Big 10 and Big 12 to kind of catch them, assuming that like, so again, I just named like seven teams I think just have such better pathways to get. So I just find, I would find a one nearly impossible. A two still seems certainly like, or not likely, but like a distinct possibility. But yeah, I think the three would be my prediction right now. And like, hey, that's not bad at all. That's still, you know, right where you want to be. I think that there's like, oh, yeah. I think the cliff usually comes at like four, in my opinion. Looking back at, you know, teams that are in the championship hunt, Final Four hunt, like it seems like the difference between, you know, if you're a one seed, like, yeah, you're in your own tier, then like two or three is another tier. And then I feel like there's like a bigger tier drop, to four. So, and again, like when it comes to initial matchups, all that, I don't think it matters too much to the Gators. To be honest,
yeah,
I've been kind of guilty of like not really caring too much about the bracket because of just kind of feeling like the Gators were in the kind of range they are, like the ones out of the pit. Like I haven't been like super into the nitty gritty, but you know, I didn't know this question was coming, but luckily was listening to some podcasts today about some bracketology podcasts. I was talking to Lucas Harkins, our, you know, bracketologist of record here that we like on the show. And then, you know, listening to a couple of things that had me, you know, pondering, looking at the other opportunities. So, yeah, I guess like, hey, we can go see later at the end of the year if we're right. But at this moment, I would predict a three seed for the Gators, and I do not see a one seed as a possibility.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Yeah, I'm with you. We had another tournament type question from Garrett Willard with likely, and it's similar. We kind of talked about it a little bit, but it's he's got a different spin on it with 4-1 seeds sort of separating from the pack a bit, Arizona, Michigan, UConn, Duke. Now keep in mind, this was 7 days ago. So this question is a little outdated, but I see you could still make the point that like there are probably four teams. Like, let's throw Illinois in there, even though they just lost to Michigan State. It looks like they're going to bounce back tonight. You know, you got to throw Iowa State. Point is there somebody you'd rather see in Florida's bracket for a potential Elite Eight game? Like, I'm interested in your take on this, Eric. I think, for me, it's probably UConn. I know they lost to them once. You know, I thought Florida played pretty well in that game, and you know, very easily could have won. Ruben Chinyelu, you know, missed, I think, six layups. it's a very weird game for Florida's front court. I mean, these weren't like greatly contested shots. Florida held Braylon Mullins in check. He's a lot better than he was now, but anyway, that would kind of be my choice. Maybe Michigan, although Michigan has a skilled front court, a little different kind of composition than Florida.
Yeah. Like this year does not, like I am not as, like last year, I think I looked at a lot of the, like I looked at Duke, I looked at Florida, I looked at Houston, looked at Auburn. I even looked at, you know, I really liked Alabama, the, you know, Tennessee showed some high level, like there was a lot of teams I thought were like really, really good. The It seems a lot flatter this year. I would say as well that I think UConn would be the team out of those four seeds, or four number one seeds at the moment, that I'd most like to face. I do think that UConn is just, and I really mean this as a compliment. Like, I don't think they're that talented. I don't think they're anywhere near the top four. Like, they're not a one seed in terms of talent. They of course play beautiful connected basketball. They haven't been as good offensively as they've been the last 3 years, but have been much better defensively, which is also kind of like spoke to why they've been really good, but how they aren't that talented. Like, they've had to kind of become more of a grinded out type of team. And that's where they are also like vulnerable, because they're not the explosive offense. And it's almost one of those things when you see that, like, how Florida was not playing their best basketball at the time and just was right in it with a, de facto home crowd in Store South for UConn. It's like, yeah, I think that's the one you'd run back. I do think the matchup that I would like the least would be Michigan. I think Michigan, if for those who have not seen, they also kind of play two centers at the same time, but have like a Jaxel Lendeberg who brings a lot more shooting than any of Florida's front court pieces. But yeah, between Ade Mara, 7'3", who even would give Florida's length issues, Merez Johnson, who just brings the kind of like physicality to match up with the Florida, and then a Jaxel Lendeberg, who's got a lot more like, almost like he's got a little bit of like the Keyshawn Hall to him. Not quite. He's still a little bit like bigger, but, and more of a jump shooter, who's actually not shot the ball that well recently. But I just think that would be the tougher matchup for the Gators. And I also do think that Michigan's defense is just absolutely suffocating. And for a Florida offense that is not great in the half court and was really relied on the offensive rebound, I think Michigan could make things quite uncomfortable. I might as well also just like complete the thought. Like, I think you run it back with Arizona. The fact that Arizona does play a similar style to the Gators, I'd still like think Florida would feel pretty good in a rematch.
I do too.
They just rattled off 23 straight wins before losing to Kansas. Maybe that loss to Kansas, who's playing a little bit better recently, maybe that also thinks like that makes you think that Florida would match up a little bit better. And then with Duke, this just like doesn't totally feel like your regular Duke team. I don't love their backcourt. I don't love their wing. Like, it's I do think Cam Boozer has been fantastic. Patrick Ngongba been fantastic. Malik Brown, like, that makes a front court that's really, really good. Like, the backcourt does not scare me. Like, that's another one that if Florida sees Duke in the tournament, like, I still feel like if you could, I know it's like impossible to say like what site it is, what like leads up to that moment. But like, if there was a bracket in front of me that saw Florida versus UConn, I'd go Florida. If it was Florida over Duke, I'd go Florida. If it was Florida over Arizona, I think I'd go Florida. And if it was Michigan, I would go Michigan. I'd also maybe like put in some sleeper and say that I think Iowa State would give Florida all kinds of issues. I think Purdue would be really interesting. I think Purdue would give Florida issues. And that's what's like actually kind of funny to me, is if you were to look at like the top four teams in the country, I think I would pick Florida to beat three of them. If you took like the next batch, I would take two of them or maybe three to beat Florida. I don't really know what I think of Houston. That would be, I don't know. And I don't know if I want to see a rematch.
Though I have a take on narrative stories. I have a take on Houston, because I do think it's interesting that we had the same answer. Like, we're like, yeah, like UConn, and then like the worst is Michigan. like, that's Michigan. Not, I think Michigan would be Michigan would be the team I would least want Florida to play. UConn first. So I think Florida would, like, the revenge factor is the only thing that makes me reticent to predict something bold. Like, I think Florida would just roll Houston by 10 to 15 points. Like, Kingston Flemings is awesome. Okay. He is so fun to watch. But other than that, it's like Uzan, Sharp. Okay. Been there and now have better perimeter defenders than they had last year when they beat them. It's JoJo Tugler, who now not only has to deal with Condon, but he gets healthy Condon. And all of a sudden there's the emergence of Ruben Chinyelu. Like, I just think it's a bad matchup for Houston. Honestly, if I'm a Houston Cougars fan, I don't want to play Florida. And maybe they do, because they think some mystical Kelvin Sampson revenge is in the offing. I don't really see that as much. I agree on Iowa State. I think that's a really healthy and good take. And yeah, Duke, I mean, I just go back and forth. Like, it's hard with Duke because Cam Boozer just doesn't lose, man. Like, he like he's lost like one game in like the last 3.5 years of organized basketball that he's played. Like, you know, like I thought Florida found something in the second half, and maybe they can get back to that pretty quickly. But John Shire's a really good coach. I think Duke would adjust. I also like circle Dame Sarr because I thought he played his best game in college against North Carolina. And like, that's what they've kind of been missing. It's like, who can you run off a ball screen other than Cam Boozer? Like, right. And so now maybe they get a little different because everything is like ball screen. And then like, do they do ball reversal to get it to Isaiah Evans, or do they have Cam drive, or do they get him in rotation? Like, it's just not very complicated to play them right now, in my opinion. So yeah, I mean, you know, they have the physicality, they have talent, but I don't think Florida's frightened by that matchup outside of Cameron Indoor. Okay. We're going to get a couple more in and save some, but we have a good one from Ron Mandel wants to know, and this is a little different. He said, I'm not questioning Todd Golden's coaching. Our 3-point shooting is, shall we say, poor. Alex Lloyd has one of the more pure 3-point shots I've watched. I understand in non-con, he had some rough moments. What do you think about him positionally and his future at Florida? You know, and he mentions like Todd talking about how he's kind of adjusting to playing point guard, which is interesting. And like, I do think for Alex, the shot's super pretty, and like, assuming Boogie Fland is around next year, which I think is a healthy assumption, you know, maybe Alex can come off the bench and be the backup point guard. And, you know, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, that you can see it when he shoots the ball. Everything else seems like a work in progress.
Yeah. Like it looked like a freshman. And I think that at some point, again, with how expensive it is to retain guys that have been productive and how expensive it is to bring in guys through the portal, like at some point you need guys that you can retain that didn't play a lot to go and play a bunch more in the next season and provide plus value. And I think if you're the Gators, you are just, you know, you really want to keep a guy like Lloyd around and hope that he, hope that something just like really unlocks in year two, or, you know, maybe year three. And for a year you get really, you know, plus value on that NIL figure. So I think too, when it comes to Lloyd, it's probably still needs to get a little bit more physically ready for college basketball. Cause yeah, the shooting is not an issue, but for a team like Florida that needs shooting, they've got to be not liking a lot of other stuff to not just really find a way to get him in the lineup. So I don't think it's like any, you know, I thought he was going to play and play a significant role. That obviously has not even been close to the case, but it's not to say like, oh, well, he's like a lost cause. That's just the nature of college basketball right now. And I should just like blanket statement this, or like record it for any single time anyone asks us about depth ever. Depth just doesn't matter. Every year we've done this podcast for 7 years or whatever it is, 8 years, I don't remember. people talk about how deep the team is and how are they going to use all the, it does not matter. When it comes, push comes to shove, 95% of teams play 7 or 8 guys. Like, it's just 9, 10, 11. It does not really matter. So, every year going into, you know, in the office, and hey, I'm happy for those questions. I don't think they're stupid questions, but we just every year we get questions from listeners that talk about like in the preseason, early day, there's so much talk about like depth and like how Florida is going to be able to utilize 10 or 11 guys. And the answer is just always going to be like, they will not. And Florida is not unique in that setting. That's just most teams in the country. Now, will that ever change? Will it be like so many teams in Europe right now that are playing such a higher tempo and doing hockey substitutions? Like, yeah, maybe that comes for the high major level in a more profound way than it is now. But yeah, I just, it's, this is, you could run back literally any year of this podcast and before the season, people will be talking about like, wow, it's great that Florida's going to be able to play 10 guys. You know, how is this guy in the 10th or 11th spot going to play? And it's just like, the answer is going to be the same. Like by this time or well before this time in February, the rotation's pretty much going to be down to 7 or 8. And the only depth that like really matters, I think, is like front court guys. That like, do you have a guy that can be your ninth man that's like a front court player?
Yeah.
In terms of like fouls for the times that that happens. But yeah, it's just like guards and wings just continue to get squeezed. We have now seen it for the life of our podcast, and you see it around the country as well.
Yeah. And Ron, Ron Mandel did mention, you know, Golden kind of playing him at a new position, and how I've mentioned over and over again that I think he's a two guard. And I mean, I do, but I also think like that's clearly not what Todd's vision for him is, which also probably contributes to him not playing a little. He's learning a new position, doing some things he was never did in high school, even at a very good, you know, at a national circuit high school team. It's not like his program just plays in state, but yeah, I mean, there's always a learning curve. There's been one with CJ Ingram too. Let's see. We got three more in us, I think. All right. Gusto Gator. I'm going to answer this one and only say that I hope the answer is none of them. He is the 2024 Florida basketball Masters champion. Masters pool champion. He says, I've been experiencing injury anxiety with this team. The question arises, which of the big four, Condon, Hauk, Chinyelu, or Boogie, would be the most detrimental to the team if injured? Based on my years of study at Blossett University, I like this. I'd go with Boogie, but wanted to know your opinions on this unsavory topic. I think it's Hauk based on minutes played and role. I love Blossett University. That's excellent. I will not be stunned when Eric tells me all the reasons it's Boogie Fland.
Oh man. It's an interesting take. Like no one is going to argue that Hauk has been Florida's best player. But like when the backcourt is already thin and not playing super well, eliminating the starting point guard from that group is pretty terrifying. So I actually do think that's a fairly compelling argument. If you really like push came to shove and like I had to decide, I don't want to wish injury upon anything, but if it was like, oh, so, you know, you never know. Maybe they were like, oh, a salary cap is now in play. And like, for whatever reason, you can only go into the NCAA tournament with like one of Boogie Fland or Hauk. Like, I think it would be really tough for me to say that, like, it's not like Hauk would not be the most devastating loss, but I actually do like the thought process behind like, man, this backcourt's already bad. If you take, or not very good, if you take away the stronger starting piece from that, like, and you think about like how Florida's defense has been the backbone, and think about a Klavsar lead backcourt, that's pretty jarring. I don't know if you've looked at those minutes on it. I actually have. That's not like a, I'm not making a point. Genuine question. I don't know if you looked at the Lee Klavsar minutes together, but I cannot imagine those have gone particularly
great. I haven't
defensively. I do think Hauk could be the scarier loss, but I think that the Fland argument is compelling.
That's good stuff. All right. Let's see. Jonathan Shields. There was a lot of talk of Alabama's, LSU's, South Carolina's lack of basketball NIL. Just how far behind are they money-wise from a school like Florida? You always hear these crazy numbers thrown around, but approximately how expensive are the rosters at Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky? So I can answer the latter part of that question because I know. I've seen contracts at two of those schools. Florida's $11 million, Arkansas is $15 million, and Kentucky is 21, and those are the top three in the SEC. In terms of like what LSU, like LSU is like 6.5 low, but not terrible. And South Carolina's same. I'm not sure what Alabama's is, except to say it's probably closer to LSU number than like the Florida number.
Yes, I can say that comfortably.
Yeah.
Which again, like I just think like you see how much that Well, yeah, again, this is where the different motivations in college basketball run into each other. People love transactions in the NBA, and they love running trade machines, and they love talking about offseason signings. And it's such like an offseason thing to the contract structure. Like, college basketball would be much more interesting if there was just like verified contracts for all of these guys. But again, I know it's something that really does bother me when you or I will make a comment about a team's NIL or what a player costs, and we will inevitably get the response of, well, no one actually knows what anyone's making. When it's like Neil said, Neil has literally looked at contracts. I have literally seen contracts myself. Yeah. Not as much for my job, but I, you know, so Neil has literally seen, it is not as cloak and dagger as people think. When you get to a certain level of like money, and you get to a certain amount of agents, and you get to these guys shopping school to school, like the real numbers do come out. Getting out in front of that, because I know anytime we talk about NIL, we will inevitably get the comments of like, oh, well, no one really knows what teams are making. Like, just, you know, it's not as in the dark as people think. But it is one of those things. Like, yeah, like go look at South Carolina's roster against Florida's roster, and like, you know, like tell me that it's not obvious too what these NIL budgets are looking like. And that's something too that is made the SEC really interesting. Like, yeah, you saw Florida just absolutely, you know, you saw Florida double up South Carolina. Well, their NIL is about double South Carolina. So like, what do you expect? That's what we're getting to as a sport.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, man. All right, a couple more. Jackson Klaus, he's going to put me on the spot with Fawcett here. Because I have run my mouth on this issue, so I deserve what's coming for me. You know, I believe if you, so as I try to build my platform as a college basketball journalist, I'm not as knowledgeable or fancy with the film as Fawcett, so I have to craft it by storytelling and takes, and I try to avoid hot takes, but I have said recently that I think Todd Golden and Florida staff, not just Todd, are the best coaching staff in the SEC right now. Jackson wants me to expand upon what I think separates him and what the staff does specifically to win. And then he wants to know, Eric, who your top 3 to 5 coaching staffs in the nation are. So this is a fun one.
Oh, my goodness.
I think Florida. So like for me, it's, we just talked about NIL, which is the perfect segue to why Todd Golden is good. Like him and Jonathan Sapphire are masterful at, like, they know what their salary cap is, and they build rosters that perform based on certain, you know, that the analytics that they look at, and they find players that it's almost like Moneyball, but not, you know, precisely like that. I don't think they thought they were going to assemble a team that shot 28.9% from beyond the arc this far into the SEC season. And if I have a criticism of Florida right now, it's that I do think that offensively, and I know this is crazy, right? What's the second straight year they've had a top 20 offense, or the third straight year, I think, certainly very close. But you know, I think offensively Florida can be a little stolid and a little predictable. Especially if you kind of limit their like gut dribble handoff and horns actions, like there's not a whole lot left in the cupboard. They play out of open a lot, which, you know, isn't necessarily dribble drive, but it really does require players to make the right reads and a whole lot of cutting, and, you know, they don't run a lot of stuff. So, you know, that's kind of where they are offensively. I think defensively, Dave Klatsky's done a really nice job with this defense, to be honest. Like the fact that they have played with 3 bigs and it hasn't really been exposed in a way, even against a team with like great wings yet, is super impressive to me. Credit him for kind of coming in and really seamlessly filling in like the role that John Andrzejek left behind. I love Carlin Hartman. Someone hire him. He deserves to be a head coach. I think he deserves to be a Power 5 head coach. I think that might be where the rubber meets the road too. Like, he may wait for a Power Five job, and it's not his fault that Johnny Dawkins has breathed life into Riley Kugel and probably saved his career. You know, I thought UCF would have been perfect for Carlin, but yeah, I mean, I think they're the best staff in the SEC. I don't think Nate Oates, and you could sell me on Nate Oates because he has less NIL. He's an elite recruiter, and he has to build through high school recruiting because of NIL a little bit. But, you know, he said he was going to fix the defense 3 years ago. They can't stop anybody for the third straight year. Like, there's a clear schematic issue there. And it's not just roster construction at this point. They need to do something about it. So I would put him at second in the SEC as it is right now. And I'll kick to Eric for kind of top five staffs in the nation. That's super interesting. Even if he gives us three, that's a great answer.
Oh, man. Like, I would start with UConn. I think, like, especially again, if we're talking staff, Luke Murray, their offensive coordinator, has revitalized Dan Hurley's career. Like, when Florida had a coaching opening and Dan Hurley was one of the guys that that Florida was interested in, I was like, oh no, I absolutely despise the way they play offense and basketball. It is hard on my eyes. That is, I do not enjoy watching that. And then he goes and gets Luke Murray, and it has transformed what Dan Hurley's known for and what UConn basketball is known for. And I think that is an underrated guy that could also, you know, you were mentioning Carlin Hartman getting a high major job. Someone that could get a high major job that maybe people on this podcast have not heard about is Luke Murray from UConn. So again, total staff, I would go UConn. You know, I'd go Bill Self at Kansas. Again, I don't think I need to talk too much with him, just like longevity. And that's something that I think, again, if you were to, like, I don't want to say like knock Florida's staff, but just like take a wait and see. It's like, you know, they hit on one class really, really well. And like the like bringing in Condon and Hauk and like are really fueling that, you know, got like one really good portal class, won them a championship, but like, you just want like, let's like see it over a little bit more period of time would just be the one thing you could say. And I think that obviously for like a Kansas who is, you know, for a Bill Self who has just like done this so much, and like, you know, people were writing the Kansas obituary already. Now they're like 11th in
Vietnam
and just beat Arizona. And they're doing it without, again, a whole bunch with Darren Peterson, a whole bunch of NIL investment, not playing. I will go Nate Oates. I know people actually hate that. I know that people will hate that, especially given what has gone on the last couple of weeks.
It's fair.
They have had, like, they are like the junk drawer of roster building and NIL, and have been 9th, 28th, 4th, 14th, 6th, and now 19th in KenPom. Like, to be that consistent with like having zero down years while like changing over. And again, talking about like as a staff, he lost all three assistants of his top three assistants, you know, 3 years ago, and has just like constantly been cycling out, then lost more assistants last year, lost Ryan Pinot in his offensive court. Like, he is just like he keeps losing guys to go get head jobs, and they stay good. So I don't know. Like, I think that is just extremely, extremely hard to do. So to have six very good years at Alabama in a row, yeah, I just think that's really impressive. Man, is that three? I got to keep going here.
You can stop at three. We are so close to like, I mean, we got a lot of this done. Let's do one more, which I think is super. And if we didn't answer, there's a couple left that we didn't quite get to. There's also a bunch of overlap that was super awesome. You know, I got some good stuff. Matthew actually said this chat is bumping. Thanks for doing this, guys. At the end of last year, the five-man lineup at end of games was set in stone by this time. You know, he asked about Urban playing over Lee. Like, we got these kind of overlapping ones. So I want to read a couple more, and then we'll answer a final question. Offball Sam said, no need to spend time on this post. It's mostly just a Rube appreciation. Per Bart Torvik, the kid's fourth nationally in defensive rebounding rate, 7th in offensive rebounding rate. He's the only player in the top 10 of both offensive and defensive rebounding. On College Basketball Reference, he's got the best offensive and defensive rebounding rate of any Gator in program history, and it's not close. So the question isn't even whether he's the best rebounder ever in orange and blue. It's that he's having one of the best Gator big man seasons we've ever seen. Insane development story. Yeah. Couldn't agree with that more. That's great stuff. So the question I think that is super good to end on. Oh, Asher mentioned it's inevitable that Carlin Hartman's taking a head coaching job. Wonder whether it'll be him returning to his alma mater Tulane or getting a Power 5 gig. Yeah, Ron Hunter's in trouble. So, I mean, Tulane, I suppose, is possible. I'm sure that they'll call him. I don't know if the institutional commitment that Tulane can make to him matches what Florida can do. But, you know, Florida might need to make him one of the highest paid assistants in America, or the highest. Certainly that there's going to need to be a discussion about that. Yeah, so let's do this last question, Eric. Beer Runner, thanks for subscribing. As teams start to mimic how Auburn defended Florida, really sagging and clogging up the lane, what can the Gators actually do to adjust outside the obvious adjustment of making shots? Are there things they can do with spacing, et cetera, that might free up the bigs?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty – people obviously, the people listening to this first, the Patreon viewers will know what I'm talking about. People who are listening on the audio feed will have to subscribe to Patreon. But I am pretty out on all this, like, high-low stuff Florida is doing, where they throw it to, like, a Condon at the top of the key, and they're trying to, like, post up Chinyelu at the front of the rim. And it's a really difficult angle to just, like, lob the ball into traffic. And it's just resulted in so many turnovers. And if it is a catch, there's usually so much airtime under the ball that teams are there to just meet Chinyelu on the cat. Like, I do think that Florida can stay away from just like, oh, we've got our two bigs on the floor, we need to flash this high low look all the time. And then of course you are seeing, like, our Patreon supporter said there, the way that Auburn just, like, completely sagged off. Of course, like, I think Florida going into the season thought that teams wouldn't be able to just do that to Condon. I don't think they thought Condon was going to shoot 40% from three, but they probably thought he was going to be close to 40% if people were to literally dare him to shoot. And that hasn't been the case. And I do think that Florida needs to get out of that a little bit more, work a little bit more in the outer thirds, get more elbow catches, and try to enter the ball down low from these kind of, like, angled post-ups from the side. Less of that stuff just right in the key lane extended, because, again, that's the stuff that his teams just completely sag off. Condon particularly, it just makes everything really jumbled, and also really, like, slows things down, because they're daring him to throw that high-low pass. They're denying on the wings, except maybe even, you know, at least denying Hauk, and trying to keep him from getting the dribble handoffs. And if they do get a dribble handoff, well, someone's now waiting in the lane. So, I think that needs to be really adjusted, scrapped, to be honest, in a lot of ways. That would be kind of my first thought. And that's why, you know, you hope that if you're Florida or a Florida fan, that you see that loss and you say, okay, like, it's time to make some adjustments.
Yeah, I think that's good stuff. I mean, spacing is offense. It really is. Like, and so, you know, when you play with, even with how as productive as he's been, when you play with three big guys like Florida does, it makes it harder to create more space. And, you know, Florida has to kind of figure out ways to get people moving and to make the defense rotate. And you know, sometimes it can be pretty tough. I think one answer for Florida that we've seen the last couple of games since the Auburn game has been they pushed off rebounds more, gotten out more in transition. And I think pushing tempo, Florida doesn't want to play like as fast as Texas A&M or Georgia, but they do want to play quick and push tempo when it's opportunistic to do so. And I think they've picked their spots and done that a little more. And so as a result, they have 20 plus transition points and every game since the Auburn game. Like, I imagine they'll try to do that even against Georgia tomorrow night. You know, limit the number of possessions that you have to play half court offense too is another kind of way to diagnose that stuff. So that's as many, I think, as I do think they're taking less threes, which is interesting. It was funny. Todd Golden referenced Arizona after one of the games where I think it was they made like three threes and beat Alabama by 23. And he's like, well, we have like an Arizona number on our 3-point attempts. And, you know, again, like that was sort of because they were emphasizing getting out, transition, being opportunistic and in that way, too. So, yeah. Thanks for this. This was a lot of fun. It's always fun to do these for our Patreons. And we will let Eric sign us off.
Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.